Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Imagine a bus that travels in its own dedicated lane at the speed of a subway train, dramatically faster than conventional buses. A bus that brings high-speed transit to areas of the city where subways don't run, and the costs of which are far below that of rail rapid transit. Although this sounds too good to be true, this is one instance where a too-good-to-be-true idea has proven realistic, workable, and highly beneficial. Bus rapid transit, also known as BRT, is a tried and true around-the-world method, and a number of American cities are now on board.
We have with us today to discuss this interesting topic Walter Hook, who is Executive Director of the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy, which is a New York City-based not-for-profit organization that provides technical assistance on sustainable transportation development. He's had wide experience with bus rapid transit around the world and is co-editor of the book Bus Rapid Transit Planning Guide. Walter, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Can you give us, for those of us that don't know much about BRT, can you give us a brief explanation of just what it is?
Okay. Well, essentially what bus rapid transit is it's an attempt to apply many of the elements of a high-quality light rail mass transit system and recreate them using bus technology. And this was done first in Curitiba, Brazil in the 1970s. And the characteristics of bus rapid transit are essentially that you have a station that looks much like a light rail platform or a subway station, where in Latin America, at least, the passengers would pay a ticket collector, pass through a turnstile, and then enter an enclosed station environment. Once you're in that station, the bus pulls up to the station, and the floor of the station is level with the bus floor, just the way it would be if you were getting on a metro car. What that does is it allows all the passengers waiting in the station to get on and off the bus at the same time, rather than one passenger getting on, paying the driver, and then the next passenger getting on and paying the driver. In order to make the boarding and alighting time as low as possible, that bus normally is a large bus with multiple wide doors. So if you have a person in a wheelchair, that person can also roll directly onto the vehicle without any delay. So the primary benefit of bus rapid transit is really about the bus station interface to minimize the delay caused by people getting on and off the bus. The second most important element, of course, is to give the bus a physically separated lane in the traffic so that the bus does not get caught in traffic congestion. Now, there are many, many other elements of the best BRT systems, but those are really the two most important ones.
How does BRT gain a speed advantage on arterial streets using signalized intersections?
Well, the speed advantage for the bus is as I said, the boarding and alighting times of the passengers are really the major cause of delay on your current bus service. So, you know, at least here in New York, for example, the bus will stop and each passenger has to climb up some steps and pay the driver. So that takes essentially 3 to 4 seconds per passenger. Now, on a bus rapid transit system, because you've already paid and because you don't have to climb up any steps, the delay per passenger is only about 0.3 seconds. So what that means is that if you've got, say, 50 people getting on the bus, all 50 people can get on that bus in a BRT system in a matter of 10, 15 seconds. In a normal bus service, you know, that could take quite a few minutes to get all those people on board. That's the primary time savings benefit of BRT. Now, there are other benefits. If the road is very congested, if the busway is sufficiently protected from the rest of the traffic blocking the buses, then you also have the benefit that the bus is going to travel at the maximum speed allowable on that street, whereas the rest of the vehicular traffic is going to be slowed down because of congestion.
Yep, and I ride the bus system in the city of Chicago, and I can say that 3 or 4 seconds is generous in terms of how long it can take somebody to get on and pay in many cases. So I take your point about getting people on and off, but the question I have then is, also in the city of Chicago, you have the opportunity to get off every 2 blocks. You can call your stop and have the bus stop. Is that the case in these BRT systems, or are there greater distances between the stops?
Well, in the most sophisticated state of the art bus rapid transit systems, you have quite a few options. Now, in the United States, the bus stops tend to be quite close together. In most international BRT systems, the average distance between stops would be something closer to 450 meters, something like a third of a mile, let's say. However, in the best BRT systems, you're also going to be introducing passing lanes at every stop so that you can introduce express buses. So some buses using that trunk bus rapid transit corridor are going to make very, very few stops and travel at very high speeds, whereas you'll also provide some local services that will stop, let's say, every third of a mile. But the U.S., because the bus services are very much targeted to people that are elderly and with various disabilities, those walking distances are more difficult for them. So, but if you design a system for the average person, the time savings of having fewer stops tends to work out in favor of having slightly fewer stops.
And in big cities on arterial streets, buses travel about 6 to 8 miles per hour, which is about 7.5 to 10 minutes per mile. What's a typical BRT speed?
Well, it's going to depend a little bit on where you are. If you're in a downtown, you're probably going to move about, with a full BRT system, you're going to probably move about 15 miles per hour. Once you get out of the central business district, you probably get it up to 18 miles per hour. But obviously, if you've got a BRT that has also accommodated express bus services, you're going to have a lot higher speeds, particularly on those express services.
So that doesn't sound like an extraordinarily high speed, but I think people generally are unaware of the fact that if you look at a rail rapid transit system or a light rail system, that the average speed is not substantially better than that because of so much time is spent accelerating, decelerating, and dwelling in stations.
Yeah, that's right. Those are average speeds. Those are not the maximum speeds. And, you know, you should also be aware that on some of these bus rapid transit systems that are emerging in the U.S. where they're operating in the middle of highways, for example, for long sections of the route, you're getting much higher speeds, average speeds in the 40 mile an hour range. But in a standard urban environment, you're really looking at bus speeds essentially matching private car vehicle speeds, which tend to average in that 18 mile per hour range.
So that makes them pretty competitive.
Exactly.
So what about dealing with traffic signals on our arterial streets? Does BRT get a priority?
Well, it depends on the system and how frequent the buses are. So in most of the developing world where we tend to concentrate most of our efforts, we're working on arterials with very, very large numbers of buses. So, for example, in Guangzhou on the BRT corridor that we just designed that opened in February, we have over 700 buses per direction at the peak hour. Now, when you have that kind of a bus volume, you can't give them any signal priority because the light would just be green all the time. So instead, what we do on those kind of arterials is we restrict left-hand turning movements across the busway, and we force those left-hand turning vehicles to make several right turns to kind of go around a block. And the removal of those right turns tends to increase the green signal phase for both the buses and for the mixed traffic. So on a BRT corridor, we would start with eliminating as many turning movements as possible. Now, in the United States, where you have bus frequencies that are much lower, what you'll have is traffic signal preemption. So if a bus is pulling up to a traffic light and the light is about to turn yellow or red, if it senses that the bus is coming, it will keep the green phase for a few additional seconds to allow that bus to pass. And that does have a very minor adverse impact on the perpendicular traffic, but that green phase also benefits the rest of the traffic on the mixed traffic on the major arterial.
And in these cities where you implement a system that requires limiting left turns and other things that are to an automobile driver be perceived as adverse, do you get resistance? Is that a battle that you have to fight to implement a system like this that's really built to maximize the flow of buses?
It depends. We try to pick corridors to start with where there are so many buses operating on the road already that giving them an exclusive lane actually improves the speed for the buses, but also for the mixed traffic. Particularly in the countries we work in, sometimes these buses are not particularly well disciplined, so they may be stopping two and three abreast at a bus stop and essentially blocking the rest of the road. And by forcing them into a physically segregated lane and giving them a very refined boarding and alighting process, which forces them to stop at a particular location, you're actually decongesting the remaining lanes of traffic. You're also improving the traffic flow when you reduce the number of turning movements. You're improving the amount of green time, not only for the buses, but also for everybody else going up and down that road. So in the developing world, we have a whole lot of cases where through intelligent engineering design, it's a win-win where the bus speeds improve, but the mixed traffic speeds also improve. Now, that's less easy to do in the United States where your bus frequencies are quite a bit lower.
And I understand that Latin America has the most extensive collection of BRT systems in the world. Why is that?
Well, I think it's simply a copycat thing. Bus rapid transit started in Curitiba, Brazil, in the early 70s, and then many other cities in Brazil implemented sort of less than ideal imitations of that system throughout the 1980s. And because the copies weren't very good, I think a lot of Brazilians sort of cooled off on the idea. Then in the late 1990s, a lot of other Latin American cities were familiar with Curitiba because they had seen it or they knew about it from professional circles. And so then Quito built a really great system, and then Bogota's mayor knew about Quito and knew about Curitiba. So then Bogota implemented Transmilenio, and that really revolutionized the way people think about bus rapid transit because it had such high speed and such high capacity that it actually started competing with metros. Then about six other cities in Colombia started to develop systems because the Colombian national government started to support them nationwide. So within Latin America, you have a sort of common culture, you have a common set of consultants, and so it disseminated in that way. Now, my organization was pretty heavily involved in taking those political leaders and those engineers to Africa, India, China, and to Indonesia, where the concepts of bus rapid transit were then explained to those cities. And now most of those countries also are developing or have developed very good quality bus rapid transit systems. It's been a little bit slower to pick up in the United States, mainly because the bus volumes here and the public transit ridership is just not that high.
I wanted to pick up on the notion of the spread of this technology, this concept, because as you describe it, it sounds like it's really gone viral in South America. And what you're saying is that there isn't quite the same need in terms of bus volumes, of the demand for bus travel. But there's a great appeal in the United States for light rail transit. And I wonder if you could help us understand the comparison, the contrast between LRT and BRT, and maybe what are the barriers? Why do these communities seem to want to go with LRT and steer around BRT?
Well, I think that in the United States, the use of buses is restricted to quite low-income people and people with disabilities. And as a result, it's a little bit stigmatized socially, the way normal buses tend to be still used by the middle classes in much of the rest of the world. So that's part of it. I think part of it is that many people in the United States recall the tearing out of our streetcar systems, the General Motors, buying up of these traction companies and replacing them with buses. And so there's kind of a nostalgia for the old streetcars that we used to have. So there's a perception, I think, in the United States that real mass transit means rail mass transit. And I think that's partly a lack of familiarity with the high-quality bus rapid transit systems that have emerged now in Latin America. Compounding that problem, I think, has been that a lot of transit agencies across the country have made some fairly mediocre bus system improvements and labeled them bus rapid transit. And this has been quite serious in some cities and not so bad in others. But you know, for example, the Silver Line in Boston down Washington, it really is just a silver articulated bus, and it doesn't really have any other BRT elements, and yet it was billed as a BRT system. So this really antagonized, it made the communities feel like they were being shortchanged and they weren't getting real mass transit. So I think that's a lot of what's going on and why it hasn't took off in the United States. I think the other piece of the problem is that, you know, we have such a small number of bus passengers that we don't have much bus frequency here. So if you put in a physically segregated bus lane and you have a frequency of every 5 to 10 minutes, that bus lane looks empty most of the time and people get irritated. Whereas if you've got a very crowded corridor like you would have more typically in Latin America, the bus lane's going to have a bus every 30 seconds or every minute, and that people get less irritated because they can see, well, all those buses are going up and down it. So it just means it's going to be much harder here in the United States. The other very important thing to think about when you think about in the U.S. whether to go for light rail or bus rapid transit is when you have very, very low demand, the important thing is that you give people a service that will take them directly to and from where they want to go. Now, if you build, as Detroit is thinking about, a fairly short light rail line, maybe 3-4 miles, maybe eventually extending it to 8 or 9 miles, there are almost no bus routes in most American cities that simply go up and down a single corridor. Most people in most cities, they'll take bus routes that go fairly long distances, and they'll go on fairly low density parts of the city, and then they'll get together and there'll be several bus routes on the really busy main arterials. So if you force all of those current bus passengers to go to a light rail line and then transfer onto that light rail system, they're going to have to make a transfer, and that's going to cause some kind of a delay for them. If you put in a bus rapid transit system, the important thing in the U.S. will be to pick corridors where you've got multiple bus routes converging and allow people to take those same buses that are operating in mixed traffic and then get on the trunk line to go to their destination so that they don't have the additional transfer delay. I think that's the primary benefit of moving for bus rapid transit in the U.S., where the conditions for using light rail don't really exist. In the U.S., the main reason cities really want to go for light rail is because if you really only have one lane to dedicate to a mass transit vehicle, with a multi-car light rail vehicle and very, very good signals, you can get maybe 20,000 people down that one lane of traffic in each direction during the peak hour. There's almost no corridor in the United States that has anything close to that demand. The maximum I've seen is about 6,000 passengers per direction, which can be easily accommodated with buses. So the main justification for light rail and spending that extra money is that extra capacity, which in most of the U.S. you simply don't need. Now, the other main reason is aesthetics and nostalgia, and those are legitimate. If people have aesthetic or nostalgic reasons for wanting light rail, then that's perfectly okay. It just costs more.
So talk to me about the increment of cost. Are we able to deliver the BRT at a substantially lower cost?
Well, in the developing world, the infrastructure costs of bus rapid transit are between a tenth and a twentieth of the costs of a light rail system or a heavy rail system, probably more like a 50th of a heavy rail system. And the operating costs, bus rapid transit in the developing world tends to make a profit, so there's no operating loss. There are only two or three metro systems in the entire world and virtually no light rail systems that actually make an operating profit or no losses. So in the developing world, the economics is extremely clear. In the United States, the economics is slightly more ambiguous. The capital cost benefits are not as pronounced. It may be that bus rapid transit will cost a third of a light rail system. And if you include the depreciation of the rolling stock in the operating costs, then bus rapid transit is also far cheaper to operate. But the real question is also which system is going to capture more passengers. So if your bus rapid transit system can actually serve a network of existing bus routes, it will have a whole lot more passengers than a much more limited network of light rail.
What about the environmental impact? Are BRT buses cleaner running than conventional buses?
Well, that all depends on the type of bus that the people designing the project decide to use. Most of the environmental benefits of a mass transit project result from people switching from private cars to a mass transit vehicle. Some of the environmental benefits come because of the whatever bus is being used is operating at a higher speed. But in a bus rapid transit system can use a very clean vehicle. Most of the fancier systems are using a Euro 4 diesel bus with a particle trap or a hybrid bus. Some of them are using electric trolley buses. The immediate emissions of those systems will probably be slightly higher than a purely, except for an electric trolley bus, that would be more immediate emissions at the tailpipe than would a light rail system. The light rail system still uses electric power, and so it depends on how you generate your electric power. And if you're generating it from coal, you're causing a problem someplace else. So that's sort of, but it really depends on the type of vehicle you use.
And 14 U.S. cities, including New York City, currently have BRT systems, even though you've suggested that some are not all that they might be, and 9 more are planning them. Can you tell us a little about the New York City experience, problems, challenges? Is it too early to gauge its success?
Well, the New York City Select Bus Service, as it's being called by the city, has several really critical elements that are key to any bus rapid transit system, the most important being the off-board fare collection. That has been implemented now on the Fordham Road Select Bus Service and also on the 1st and 2nd Avenue Select Bus Services. And that has yielded very, very significant time savings. The other thing they're trying to do in New York is to enforce the bus lanes, which they're only painted red. They're not physically separated. They're trying to get the law through where the buses can have cameras that take a picture of vehicles that are obstructing the bus lane, and that person automatically gets ticketed. So once we get that kind of onboard the bus camera enforcement, the enforcement of that lane should improve quite significantly. The plan is to upgrade the current bus station, which is currently just like a regular bus stop, to being a at-level, platform-level boarding platform with some nice architecture in a bus bulb. That should bring the quality of the service here to pretty close to a full BRT standard, although we're not completely happy with the fact that the lanes aren't physically segregated, and we would have liked some additional turning restrictions across the bus lane and a few other minor things. But basically, hopefully, the system in New York is incrementally moving towards what we'd like to call as a full bus rapid transit system. But right now, the city's calling it Select Bus Service.
So what's been the customer reaction to that?
Well, the customer reaction has been generally pretty positive of the riders. Some of the rollout in the beginning was a little confusing. I think the transit authorities' information systems to customers were a little bit confusing. So there was a lot of grumbling when it first opened up. But I think now the passengers are quite happy. The speeds are up. The bus lane right now is still very frequently obstructed because we don't have the onboard camera enforcement yet. There's some grumbling, of course, about loss of curb access of some parking vehicles and that sort of a thing. But in general, I think it's reasonably favorable, and it will be even more favorable when they roll out the whole system.
Is there an example of a U.S. BRT system that you rate as the best or among the best? And if so, why do you rate it so highly?
Well, we're pretty happy with the Cleveland BRT system. It has most of the full elements of bus rapid transit. We're pretty happy with some parts of the Las Vegas BRT system. We think the Orange Line in Los Angeles is quite good. We know of quite a few cities that are planning some quite significant bus rapid transit, which we're quite hopeful about.
And what do you see as the future of BRT systems in the U.S.? I know you've mentioned that you guys are doing a lot of work in developing countries where they seem to be, at least at the moment, a quicker, better fit. How about here in the States?
Well, we're looking very closely at Chicago. They've got a few proposed corridors that we think could be quite good. New York has a few more corridors they're working on, but they're tough corridors politically and spatially. where we think Los Angeles would be great, but there's not a lot of political will for it right now. The San Francisco Bay Area has some really great plans to connect Oakland and the Berkeley area to San Francisco. That corridor looks very, very promising. And Vegas has some expansion plans that are also promising. Cleveland system came out quite nice, but as far as I know, they're not planning much expansion right now.
So that sounds like we've got a lot of interesting things to look forward to. As you've educated us substantially about BRT in this conversation, it looks from where I'm sitting like there's a pretty strong emotional and maybe political attachment to transit services that have rails underneath them. But as you've described it, sounds like BRT can meet the needs in terms of service attributes and in many cases, at a lower cost. So we appreciate your spending the time with us to tell us about this important new service option, and we look forward to watching what you're doing and what the field does in the future. So thank you very much.
Great. Thanks.